Executive Director of the Canadian Security Partners Forum and Vice Chair of the Infrastructure Security Partnerships Public-Private Collaboration Committee. Voted as one of the most influential people in security by Security Magazine in 2013, Bonnie will be inducted into the International Women in Homeland Security and Emergency Management Hall of Fame later this month in San Antonio, Texas. With a diverse background in the defense, intelligence, and security fields, Bonnie will be giving a brief presentation about recent developments in the Canadian security platform. Please join me in welcoming Bonnie to the conference.
Can you all hear me? Great. So I'm going to start off by talking a little bit about how Canada's cyber architecture and different contextual factors are affecting our how we are conducting metadata analysis. So this headline came out recently in the Toronto Star with Prime Minister Harper saying that Canada is not collecting metadata. I would argue that, in fact, we are collecting metadata on Canadians and potentially at a rate and in a way that is more aggressive than most of the Five Eyes. So, for example, when Prime Minister Harper says that he's not a big believer in widespread snooping and prefers a targeted approach, this is from one of the Snowden leaked files from the NSA. It's very difficult to do targeted approaches to intelligence if you don't have that broad approach as well. And we can see also from recent reports that our intelligence community is in fact collecting large amounts of data on Canadians. In 2011, we had over a million requests in that year for data on Canadians. The government also is working quite hard on social media monitoring. And I'll get onto that a little bit later in the talk as well, but spending a lot of money and a lot of interest in what Canadians are saying online. This is an example, a template of an American program through the NSA, Science of Cybersecurity, and they've developed a number of different lablets, so different cyber hubs based in a number of different US universities. This has been an interesting program. It was formally announced in April of 2014, but has been around for quite some time. What I find interesting, though, is that on the Canadian side, we've taken this very simple model of the NSA working with dedicated university labs to work on encryption and other kinds of cyber problems. It's a very simple, fairly closed, fairly controlled operations. On the Canadian side, what has happened is we've gone from a very simple template, a very simple operation, to something that is incredibly open, incredibly broad, has a number of different motivations attached to it beyond just research in cybersecurity, including economic development, trade, there's some immigration motivations in there, cyber surveillance, and social engineering as well. And it's quite an interesting platform. We do see, instead of the NSA working with universities, we do see a number of our intelligence and law enforcement organizations working with some 48 different centers across the country through what's called the network networks of centers of excellence. And I'm going to get a little bit more into this after, but there's a lot of universities on the platform, a lot of students, a lot of foreigners on it as well from outside of Canada coming in. The private sector is on the platform, the government's on the platform, and then it's going off onto a cyber backbone, which is then being offloaded internationally. So I'll get into a little bit more detail on how this developed. So GRAND is one of the, if you look at this little logo here, GRAND is one of the parts of this networks of centers of excellence that I came across. It's quite an interesting platform run through a lot of universities, and there's a lot of good research that's being done on these platforms, a lot of legitimate good research at a number of different universities across a number of different themes. And it does have, as with the NSA programs, the research projects are all codenamed. I could only get a slice of this picture. I wasn't able to get a copy of their full program online. You can get details on the program, but not the actual full circle of all the different programs and themes coming out of it. If you do break it down, if you go online and put all the pieces together, these are some of the older programs that were funded, all codenamed. There's a requirement that two universities have to be working on them at one time for the contracts. These are the current programs. And if you add up the government funding into all of these different research projects on this platform, we're looking at nearly $1 billion. This is very quietly distributed, I have to say. And it's quite interesting. One project stands out well beyond all the other funded programs. Whereas the NSA was funding the lablets about $2 million apiece, on the Canadian side, we're looking more at $25 million apiece, with the exception of this one, which is $113 million. And if anybody wants to take a guess at what kind of research that was, it starts with Franklin, ends in expedition. There were other, ArcticNet did other research as well, to be fair. But a lot of that $113 million went to finding the Franklin expedition. How I came across this network and this cyber backbone is twofold. I found out that my personal data had been uploaded into one of these centers, these little lablets, without my permission or knowledge. I found out through it, kind of in a third-party way, that my information had been uploaded. Contacted my lawyer. They can't get it off the platform. It's a one-way collection, which is an interesting problem. So on the Canadian side, what we're looking at is a very broad, very open system that started with the cyber research platform, but is also being used for other research purposes, business purposes. We're seeing a lot of private companies loading onto this platform to use the server space. So it's quite a different type of research project than what we're actually seeing in the original U.S. version. So you'll see here there's GRAND, the original network that I was looking at, and Serene. Serene is dedicated specifically to cybersecurity research. They've recently, and you can see this is most likely a metadata project. It is in the light of the lablet cyber hub versions that we saw in the US. These groups are now working together, and so the information is actually crossing between projects on this platform as well. What's interesting, though, is if you go back and if you actually look at what some of these programs are, NAVAL and YAO, what's interesting is that, and in government documents you can corroborate this, the government had actually done a research project on the researchers themselves. And I've seen a copy of some of their contracts, and I don't believe many of the researchers even knew they were being studied, which is against academic rules, as I understand. They were actually trying to, the government project was attempting to do some research on could the government build an agile network using professors. And so they gave them a lot of grant money, and then they tracked them to see were they going to the conferences? Were they communicating with each other by email? Were they meeting in person after the conferences? Were they working on projects together after this? And so every time they showed up for a conference, they would track their registrations, track their communications. And I don't believe that many of the researchers even knew within this network that they were being studied. Now, what's interesting is the quote from the final project, the final paper. Researchers turned out to be interesting because, like ball players, we have very good metrics on them. Like I said, I don't think the academics knew they were being studied, and we can see that from some of their comments. What's also interesting is I have an original copy of the original report, which wasn't that favorable. Academics aren't really the most agile of community. They're very focused on their research. Their research interests are limited. They're not going to be networking that much. So there were some problems with it. The final report was a little more generous in terms of the results. But I found this quite interesting. This is another example of how the network was actually doing things in addition to the original US template of research on cybersecurity. this is the second time that I came across this network, or rather it came across me. I received a phone call about a year and a half to 2 years ago from a professor at a university in Ottawa who said, I see you do a lot of work on cyber. Could we meet for lunch? So I looked him up, and he was a legitimate professor, had a legitimate interest in cyber, met with him at the university, and found out that he was part of this platform. And it's very open. They have, again, businesses, academics, the government's on the platform, communication security establishment, CSE, is using the platform. And I asked him, how did you find me? He said, well, it was easy. We tracked your email traffic, found out you were working on cyber, tracked it to your IP, found your address, got your phone number, and called you. I said, well, you do know that's illegal, right? And he said, but we can do it. Now, that's not to say CSE was behind that. They're on the platform, but this was an individual academic who was in charge of the security and control of the platform who did not do that, who actually used it in a way that was not legal to contact me. What's also interesting is Digital Canada 150. I don't know if many of you have heard of this. It's the Canadian strategy that's been put out fairly recently. The objective is to have Canadians do everything possible online by 2017, which is the 150th anniversary of Canada. And you'll see this number come up quite a bit. If you go to Ottawa, you'll actually see banners around the city with Canada 150 for 2017. What's interesting is that a lot of the data that Canadians use, real estate information, medical records, insurance information, is being uploaded onto this platform by private companies who are using the servers and the computing power, and even interns through MyTax to do research on this platform. And in the first instance where I said that my information was being uploaded without my permission or knowledge, it was a third-party company who had uploaded some divorce records from the courthouse. The other lawyer had given him some divorce records of mine, uploaded them onto this platform without my permission, which came as a big surprise to me because I didn't think those were kept outside of lawyers' offices or the courts, but he can't get them off now. And MyTax is also part of the platform. It's government funded. This is the fixer. It matches companies and universities and provides interns for the sum of $7,500. A company can apply to MyTax and get an intern to do research, including metadata research, using computer facilities at these universities from this network. The concern is when you have students being assigned for 4 to 6 months, it's great for the student, good work, experience. But a lot of the students are coming in intentionally from other countries. There really is no oversight or security on this platform. And I do find that very concerning. So for example, the timeline of MyTax started out around 2009, things started to change. This was an existing program to help mathematicians in academic institutions get work. About 2011, the government changed the mandate of the organization, split it off. M-Prime remains the mathematicians' assistance program. And MyTax actually is the section that assigns students to research projects for government and for private sector on this platform. But you can see as time went on, the focus became very outward-looking, very consistent with our trade ambitions for the Canadian government. And you can see some of the partners we're working with, some communist countries, other countries that we probably wouldn't want on our cyber surveillance and cyber research platforms necessarily. So the backbone of this, so connecting all these universities and projects and the research, is the Canary backbone. Again, Canary is a fiber optic network, very, very good, very fast, very successful, has been around for quite some time. But with this new platform, the government loaded information onto the Canary platform as well. And it's heavily used by many, many users. And the information goes off to Europe, including the UK, the US, and also to Southeast Asia, including Australia and New Zealand, which you'll notice are the Five Eyes. So there's some concern there. And this is what it comes down to for Canadians. And that's the funny side of it. What became very problematic, though, was when some information from CAMH, a mental health and addiction hospital in Toronto, that data, anybody who had called in a suicide attempt or there was a suicide issue, their information was sent over to border services in the U.S. And Anne Kevookian, who is the privacy commissioner, tried to get to the bottom of it. And they found perhaps it was going into law enforcement systems, onto the CPIC system, and into the U.S. But what I find a bit troubling is that CAMH had partnered with Mars, which is part of this platform. And I wonder if the health research data that had been uploaded onto the platform escaped off the back end, as we know other information on this platform is escaping off the back end into other countries. And we simply don't know, because there really isn't much oversight at all. And this platform, the Canary fiber optic platform that links all of this together, was actually designed to share as much information as quickly and openly as possible, which again makes me very nervous when the Canadian government, our intel agencies, are actually trying to conduct cyber research on this very same platform. It seems a bit of an odd choice. Now, just to take this back into a bit broader context as well, the Canadian cyber architecture has changed significantly since about 2009 as well. What has happened is shared services has come into place. So consolidating all of our government platforms for cyber, and with the email transformation initiative, all government communications are funneling up in one direction, and that's being held in Ottawa. With the CRTC and the CASA legislation, the anti-spam legislation, CRTC has just purchased millions of dollars of servers. They've got their own lablet, as if you will, their own metadata storage facility that's just been stood up just across the river in Gatineau. And they are collecting, through CASA, this new law, information on not-for-profits, individuals, and the private sector. Now, it's interesting to note that MIT in the U.S. considers these legitimate users of the internet, and they should not be caught up in anti-spam legislation. In Canada, CASA is the most aggressive legislation on the planet for anti-spam, and is including all of these legitimate users. And I'll get onto that in a minute. But the third funneling, all since 2009, is with Project Canary, this platform that I've been describing to you. And that's involving the academic and business sectors. So when you look at these three new funnels for information up to Ottawa, you now have basically everything Canadians do in every sector, funneling all those communications up to Ottawa. And that's a big change for us. Now, it's also interesting to note that Bell controls the shared services contracts and data. Bell also controls the CRTC and CASA collected data. And Oracle controls the third. And I'll get on to why that's important in a moment. But first, what's important is that we have a super concentration of Canadian data and metadata that's being funneled upwards. But the platform that it's being loaded onto is incredibly open. It's open to students, foreign students, foreign researchers, private sector, government, businesses, everybody's on this platform. And that, to me, is high risk. When you have so much access and so much concentration of data, and there doesn't seem to be any discussion on an assumption of breach, how do you control those very concentrated pools of data? The other thing that's happened since 2009 is a tremendous change in our laws. Many, many laws have been introduced, and these are actually reducing privacy and opening up access to law enforcement and the intelligence agencies and the government. So, for example, now I have a little Canadian flag next to these, and I'll get on to that in a minute too. These were introduced on Canada Day, and this government does seem to put a lot of emphasis on Canada Day and a series of 5-year plans, which I'll get on to. This suite of laws has really changed the way that the government and law enforcement and intelligence can look at data in Canada. This is an example of a slide from the CASEL legislation, how to comply with it. And this again is concerning. To comply with CASEL, I'm not sure if many of you are familiar with the new law. It wasn't well advertised before it came into play on Canada Day this year. But essentially, the CRTC can now knock on your door without a warrant and demand your phone, your computer, access to all of your communications, text, email, whatever they want. And it can be based merely on a complaint from an anonymous person on a tip line. And to comply with the law, and the fines are $1 million per person per email recipient. So if you sent out to a list of 50 people, we're talking $50 million fine. And that's not through the courts, that's directly from CRTC. $10 million per email if you're a business. So to comply with it, you need to, when they come to your door, you need to explain to them, these are all my contacts. This is when I got express consent to contact them. And you're basically mapping out all of your relationships, and you must prove that to CRTC on the spot. The Americans are having a fit about this law. I think Canadians aren't quite aware of the implications of this yet, but this is a real problem. This is another slide from the CRTC deck on how you can comply with CASEL. Here's how you can show you have a relationship with somebody. You're exempt if it's a grandparent or a grandchild relationship, spouse, very immediate family. But if your brother-in-law doesn't like you, they can put in a complaint against you because that's not considered close enough. Here you have to prove your relationships and prove your interests, experiences, opinions that are similar to people. I mean, this is incredibly invasive, and I can't see how this is considered normal practice. And just to give you an idea, compared to the Anti-Terrorism Act, which had a number of sunset clauses and other changes that had to be implemented because it had gone too far, it was too aggressive. The problem with that one, and I advised the federal court on this one, they balanced anti-terrorism efforts with the right to life of Canadians, not the rights of the accused, but the rights of Canadians. And we've fallen into that same trap with the CASEL legislation. We're balancing anti-spam efforts with the right not to be spammed. And number one, I'm not sure that's actually a right to not be spammed, but the first instance of enforcement took place, I believe this week, in Saskatchewan. A company wasn't aware that their computers were spitting out spam. A bot had taken over and was spitting out spam at an incredibly strong rate. That company, with CRTC to work with them, was named the worst violator in Canada. Their brand took a hit in a way they should never have taken a hit. So we have some real problems that I do feel for that company right now. So if you look at the chronology of what has happened since 2009 to 2014, and you put it all together, we had a change in security policy for the government, which arguably increased the role of CSE. MyTax was co-opted for this platform. Canary was super funded at a level that even the US government is not funding their programs. Also, the platform, they took control and oversight of the information on this platform away from the chief information officers, and they grouped it all up within Canary itself. Now, that might have been for convenience, but I do have concerns about that as well. Shared services came into place, CASEL came into place. Tony Clement instructed all government employees to get all their personal data off of the platforms. So if a government employee had any personal emails, get it off the system right now. We're not quite sure why that order was made. It could be because with all the information funneled up, it's all searchable now. But if you look at the timeline now, the initiation, we do know from government documents that there are a series of 3 5-year plans. The first one was from 2009 to 14, and that seemed to be laying the groundwork. As you can see, all these changes between 2009 and 2014. 2014 to 19 is the second of 3 5-year plans. That would seem to be the operationalization phase. I can't find anything on what the third five-year plan is at all. And of course, there's the 2017 150th anniversary of Canada date, which figures prominently in the cases. So with all of this, my concern is we've gone incredibly broad, incredibly open with Canadian data, often without even their knowledge of it. And yet the policing and the enforcement has gone incredibly specific. And that's a risky combination. It's a very bold, audacious plan. And I have to disagree a little bit with George on the Snowden effect. I don't think it's so much that Snowden undid 350 years of foreign relations. I think what happened is it shed light on that this plan of cyber surveillance and in-depth invasion into the conversations, communications of citizens simply wasn't sustainable. And his revelations are going to bring that to an end faster. We're in a recalibration phase. But I think on the Canadian side, we're probably a little bit, unfortunately, more on the aggressive side of this whole initiative. Even compared to the US, we're much more on the aggressive side. So it's something that I don't think Canadians are aware of, but fascinating nonetheless. Thank you.